Welcome to the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Josiah Smelser. The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast is the shared journey of building a real estate investment property business from square one. Join me as we learn together how to conquer the real estate game to reach financial freedom. Together, we will learn from people in all areas of real estate and business in our personal trek towards escaping the rat race. Be you. Do the work you love. Play the long game. Before we get going, make sure you're subscribed to the show on whatever audio platform you're using and jump over on YouTube and subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Daily Real Estate Investor. We have shorts coming out daily as well as these podcast episodes on video. What's up, guys? It's Josiah and we're back for another episode of The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. Man, I know you thought the show was completely over. But it's not. I've got a surprise for you today. A surprise episode, if you will. So many of you who engage with me on social media probably saw that I am backing off of social media and backing off of podcasting on a regular basis. Why, might you ask? Well, here's the answer. Great news. I have reached financial freedom. And we reached financial freedom a little while back, but I'm just making this life change on stepping back from so much social media involvement. My goal with this podcast, The Daily Real Estate Investor, was to share my journey going from start to financial freedom. And thank God we have reached the financial freedom destination. Honestly, it happened faster than I thought it would, but I'm also not surprised because this stuff works. It works very well if you just stick with it. And today I want to tell you the story of how I went from start to financial freedom. And hopefully there's some takeaways that you can apply to your own journey. And one thing I truly believe in life is that no two people's journeys are the same. I don't expect you to have the same journey as me, nor do I want you to have the same journey, but I do want you to experience financial freedom. And I do think there could be potentially some takeaways that might help you get there quicker. So before we get super deep into this episode, my social media Instagram handle at Daily Real Estate Investor is still there. But I am inactive there. So I left it up. It's got my contact info. If you need coaching or consulting, you can find my email address over there. I'm happy to connect with you on that. Or if you're just wanting to say hey or whatever, I'd love to hear from you. That's there. I'm not checking that Instagram all the time. In fact, I probably won't even check it, but more than once a month, if that. But it's not been deleted. This show, all the episodes are staying up. They're there. You can listen to them. While I'm not putting this show out on a weekly basis anymore, I'm not deleting the show either. And I will drop some surprise episodes here and there. How often, you ask? I don't know the answer to that question. Frankly, the goal of this podcast was just to share my journey to financial freedom, and I'm there. So what I'm going to try to share from now on is just little tidbits along the way after we've made it to financial freedom, and maybe some things that I could share that could help you along your way. But frankly, the financial freedom journey for me was about spending more time with family, spending more time on my faith, and spending more time with my friends. And when you're doing things like social media and podcasting, you're not doing things that are focused on those other friends, faith, and family necessarily. So I kind of made the decision to back off so much of the social media and podcasting bit and focus more on the other. That being said, I cannot tell you how much I value you guys and how much your support has meant to me on the show. And I hope you'll continue to follow along. I'll drop some surprise episodes here and there. It's not going to be a weekly thing, but this is free to you. So you get what you pay for. So anyway, I appreciate all the messages of support along the way. You guys have been like, you guys have been the best. You've blown my mind with how supportive and awesome you've been. And literally it's been the wind beneath my wings, not to be too cheesy, but it's really helped me along my way on doing this, because just knowing I've got some people in my corner is awesome. So know this though, I am in your corner. Even though I'm not listening to your podcast because I don't know where it is, I'm pulling for you, and I'm actually praying for you guys. I'm gonna start praying on a regular basis for the people that are listening to the show and their goals and their families and their spiritual health, and I want you guys to succeed. In fact, I'm gonna do something different. I'm gonna pray for you right now. God, I pray that you bless every single person listening to this right now. I pray that you bless their families. I pray that you bless their spiritual health. I pray that they come to know you in a deep and meaningful way. And I pray that you help them reach financial freedom so they can do with their life what they are passionate about, because life is short. Amen. All right, so let's dive in to the story. Okay, let's go back to how this all started. So if you want to go way back, we're talking after I graduated from undergrad, I got a job at Fortune 500 Big Four accounting firm, the job you're supposed to get. And I took this job working 95 hours a week. You've probably heard this on some of my other shows, but I was absolutely miserable. This was the job I was supposed to get out of college. It was the, you know, the thing I worked so hard for in college to get to. In fact, little side note, I was undeclared going into my senior year in college because I'm your textbook entrepreneur. I did not feel like I fit in college. I loved college because of the social aspect. I loved the people in college, all my friends, and I loved the college experience, but I could not figure out what I wanted to do as far as a major, because they didn't have entrepreneurship and they didn't have real estate and they didn't even have finance at my school. I went to a small private Christian school. And so I chose accounting because I knew I could get a job. And I applied myself, had a good GPA in accounting, and got this job. It was a miserable experience, and I would consider it a crash and burn experience for me because I only stayed there about a year. And then I left that firm and went and worked at an orphanage in Rwanda for free. And I literally wanted to do anything that didn't make me feel terrible about how I was spending my time. So I felt great about spending my time in Rwanda at this orphanage. It actually put a desire for more of that work in my life at some point in the future in me. And I do hope to be really involved with something along those lines going forward. And we do support currently four kids that are in high risk situations that are either orphans or only have one parent or grandparent in the home. And that's been a huge blessing for me as well. In fact, I don't know that all these positive things that have happened for me, I don't know that it's not because these kids are praying for me. Like, I get letters from these kids and they say, "We're praying for God to bless you. We're praying for you." You know, we're all, and I'm like, if these kids are praying for me, I know that God's hearing their prayers, because these kids are pure hearted kids. And I know that's how God works. So, I'll honestly have to attribute all the good things that have happened to me, just God's blessing, period. And I think it's probably those kids literally praying for me. But so I came back from Rwanda. I was like, I can't stay over here forever because, you know, I'm working for free. I'm on my own dime. So came home, helped a friend start an appraisal company. And we were in Fort Worth, Texas. Had a blast doing that. But that gave me a taste for real estate. And I remember at the time I was... after I graduated undergrad, I went on a trip to kind of celebrate, went on a sailing trip to the British Virgin Islands with a friend. His dad had a sailboat, fortunate for me, right? So we were going on this sailing trip, and I was walking around with the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I remember my friend's dad saying, "Oh, what's that you're reading?" And I said, "Oh, it's Rich Dad, Poor Dad." And he started laughing. He was like, "Oh, man, I kind of took it as he was saying, "Oh, how cute. He's reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know?" But it's funny to me because that was about the best thing I could have been reading. I don't know what else that could have been better for me at that time, because it put an interest in real estate investing in me. And from there, that interest never really went away. So I started this appraisal company with one of my friends, one of my good friends, in Fort Worth, Texas, and I bought my first house. When I went to buy my first house, I'll never forget. I had always paid my bills on time. I had never bounced a check, never paid anything late, never had credit card debt, nothing. I was financially responsible. I went to buy my first house. I had, I want to say, $15,000 or $20,000 saved. And when I applied to buy my first house, they ran my credit and they said, you don't have any credit. And I said, what do you mean I don't have any credit? And they said, you don't have any credit. You don't have a credit score. And I was thinking, what? How can I not have a credit score? I've always paid my bills on time. I paid my utility bills. I always paid my rent on time. And they said, have you ever had a credit card or a mortgage or any? And I said, no, I haven't. I've stayed away from credit card debt. I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole when I was in college and rack up a bunch of credit card debt and all that. They said, you don't have any credit. We can't make you a loan. So I was kind of floored by this. So we came up with a plan, and I went to my local bank and borrowed $1,000. I want to say it was $1,000. And I stuck the $1,000 into an account and auto-drafted payment on my $1,000 loan from the $1,000 in the account directly back to the loan. And I put like an extra $20 in there or something, so to pay the interest. And I waited for 6 months. And then I went and I had great credit. So I created a great credit score out of thin air by borrowing money and literally repaying the loan back with the money I borrowed. Kind of a hilarious concept, but that's the way our credit system works. So, and this is 2004. Okay. I bought my first house in Fort Worth, Texas. It cost me $115,000. It was in a B minus neighborhood, maybe a C plus neighborhood. And I rented the rooms in the house to my friends from college that had moved to Fort Worth. And this was my first real estate rental experience. And it was a house hack. And it was kind of a hybrid house hack because not only was I living there, I also was renting the property out before I moved out, which is a wonderful way to get started in real estate. So this was before Bigger Pockets. This was before any of that. Did a house hack, didn't even know it was called a house hack, but had a really great experience with that. The rent from my friends that my friends were paying, which was really cheap for them. At one point we had, I want to say at least four guys living in there, if not five, because I shared my own room with someone at one point. We crammed a bunch of single beds in there and it was hilarious. But, at one point I want to say they were paying like $250 a month or something. I mean, it was dirt cheap rent for them. And then we split the utility bill. But at one point I was not paying rent because all of their rent was covering the mortgage. They were paying far less than they could pay by going somewhere and getting their own place. So it was a win-win. And, anyway, I did this for 4 to 5 years while living there. Ended up selling that house and I fixed it up while I was living there too. Refinished the hardwood floors, fixed up the kitchen, painted it, did an addition to the house. The house had two-car garages. One was attached and one was detached. This was the first little creative thing I ever did in real estate, but I had this idea of, well, since we have a two-car detached garage, why not convert the two-car attached garage into another bedroom and make it look like the rest of the house, heat and cool it, you know, do it legit. And I did that and it added a lot of value into my house. So when I moved out of that house, I sold it and made more money on that house than I'd ever made in my life. And that was after living there 3 or 4 years. Okay. I also did a flip right down the street. I'll never forget the lady across the street told me when I bought this house, I was standing out in the front yard working on something and she came over, older lady, and she said, I just want you to know that you've made the worst financial decision of your life buying this house. This is an absolute disaster. And I remember looking at this lady and thinking, she may be right. I may have just completely screwed myself here. But I also remember thinking, like, who would come over and say that to somebody that just bought a house, you know? Anyway, after flipping that house, and I made a lot of mistakes on that, one of which was I hired a contractor to do the renovation, and he hired contractors. And so, he hired contractors who hired contractors. So I had two layers of supervision above the guys actually doing the work, and they were obviously costing me more money. I was already engaged in the job, and it was a little bit too late to go fire and rearrange all that. So I just let them go through with it, but I never made that mistake again. But it's kind of hilarious because the guy I hired to do the supervision work hired someone else to do the supervision work. And the middle guys would just sit out in the driveway in lawn chairs and drink beer while their subs were working their tails off doing all this hard work. So, it was a very strange situation. But anyway, I sold that flip and made, I think, $25,000. I was very happy with that. But I remember having the thought, I'm going to go get this $25,000. I'm going to cash it. I'm going to put it in tens and ones. And I'm going to put it in a wheelbarrow. And I'm going to wheel it over to this lady's house. I'm going to knock on her front door with this wheelbarrow full of cash. And when she comes out, I'm going to say, turned out okay, you know. And in my mind, it was going to be like the greatest thing ever. I never did it. I'm glad I didn't. That would have been in poor taste, right? But man, the thought really sounded great to me. But those are my first two property experiences. I had the house hack. I sold it, made a great money. Had the flip, sold it, made great money. And by the way, I sold this in 2008, right before the financial crisis really, really, you know, got into full swing. So I had a big chunk of money, went back to school, got my graduate degree. Long story short, got my graduate degree, got married, and took a job teaching on the college level. And at that point, I started considering getting back into real estate. So I didn't have any properties. This was 2017. No properties, no real estate, still a love for real estate. And this is where the story really kicks into gear. I started listening to Bigger Pockets some, and I thought, yeah, I'm really, really into this. And I was chatting with one of my friends from high school, one of my best friends, and he said he was interested in real estate. And I said, well, why don't we try to figure this out, how we could work together? And he said, I had a really great year at my job. I've got a chunk of cash that I would like to invest. I don't know what I'm doing. You know what you're doing with real estate. You do appraisal work. You owned rental properties before. You have a knack for it. Why don't we partner up? And I said, okay, well, how does this sound? I don't have the cash to go buy real estate right now because I had used it on grad school and getting married and paying off debt and everything else. We were debt free at this point. I said, why don't we cut a deal? You put the cash in. I'll make you a guarantee that you get every dollar back that you put in before I get anything. And after all your initial investment's been paid back to you, we'll split everything 50-50. And he said, I'm totally fine with that. He said, you'll run point on finding deals, getting them renovated, rehabbed, refinanced, everything else, and then rented. And he said, I'll be the cash money man. And so we formed a little LLC. People always ask me, do you form an LLC? Do you not? You know, there's a number of different ways to go with this. Talk to an attorney that can give you guidance on the implications of all these different options. But we formed an LLC, and I went in my spare time after my classes. I would drive down to Little Rock, Arkansas, and I was a licensed agent at the time, and I would look at properties that were going into foreclosure. And the funny thing about this is 2017. You know, I'm putting this podcast out right now. It's April of 2021. So this was about 4 years ago. Okay. At this time, people were saying 4 years ago that the market was too hot and that you couldn't find properties. 4 years ago. They've been saying that ever since I started doing real estate, and they're saying it today, and it's flat out not true. What is true today is it's gotten so much more competitive, but that does not mean you can't find deals. You can find deals. They're there. Sometimes you have to be creative. Sometimes you just have to look harder, but there are deals there. You can still do this, and it's going to be available to you going into the future. Don't overpay for something, but there are deals there for you. But anyway, Little Rock, Arkansas is not, not a red hot, uber competitive market like some of the other places we've looked. It's gotten much more competitive now than it was then, but I found my first property I found was a foreclosure. The lender had taken the property back, had fixed the property up, and you know, I thought the property was worth at the time of I bought it about 75 or 80, and I paid around 40 for it or 45. And after I purchased it, I went in there and did the remaining renovation work myself. It's the only one I've done that on where I did the renovation work myself, but it wasn't super complicated. And then I hired my first property management company to manage it for me. The property management company was actually, I hired one property management company that was a bad experience. They were just mismanaging, not screening tenants properly, not on top of things. And I had to fire them. And then I hired another property management company that was excellent. Okay. And I kept that property until just this year and sold it to one of my friends. Because we are taking our money and rolling it into some new investments that I want to talk to you about towards the end of this episode. But that was, that property is near and dear to my heart because it was my first property on this financial freedom journey. The stuff that happened in 2004, that was a different part of my life because I lived in that. I did a flip. I sold it. I didn't own that going into this. So really, I would say the clock started ticking on this whole journey 4 years ago. So bought this property. It was cash flowing, I want to say $350, $400 a month. And this is after all expenses, after the mortgage payment, after management. And I was like, this actually works. Like this, the idea you have in your head before you start buying real estate, when you're just listening to stuff like this podcast and reading books, the idea you have in your head is that this will work for everyone, but it won't work for me. Like when I buy a house, something's going to go wrong and I'm going to get completely screwed over somehow. Like I'm going to go into financial ruin over this. Everybody else makes money, but for whatever reason, because I'm me, when I touch this thing, I'm going to be jinxed on it, right? So when I bought my first deal, it was, I'm not going to lie, like it was a bit terrifying. And it's kind of funny because the property cost me $45,000. Like why would I be terrified over that? But your level of angst and anxiety and worry on real estate is all relative to your past and your history and your knowledge base. So when you don't know very much, you have a right to be terrified about doing things, right? But that doesn't mean you shouldn't necessarily do it. You know, cover your bases on your research and, but don't let the fear of starting keep you from starting altogether. So got this first deal done. And it was a success, had plenty of problems along the way, had, you know, a tenant leave without paying me the last month's rent and, you know, people tear stuff up and whatnot. But so that was, I bought that property myself. The second property I bought with my business partner, actually the second property I bought was for my business partner. We had a deal where we were like, okay, instead of partnering up 50-50, we'll use his capital for one for me, then we'll use his capital for one for him, and then we'll use his capital one for me, and we'll just alternate, right? Instead of splitting them. So the first property we had out of the way, well, the next property I got for him. This time I went upstream and looked for B-class properties, and I found another property that I thought was great. I walked in, the thing was completely renovated, had granite countertops, new flooring, new paint throughout. I felt like the property was, based on my comps, worth about $185. They were selling this for $120. I put together an offer, made the offer. They, to my dismay, accepted, or not to my dismay, to my astonishment, accepted the offer. And we bought a renovated house worth $175 for $120. Now, at this point, my business partner is out of state. He doesn't even live there. He lives states and hours away. Has never seen this property. And I just helped him purchase a property with $55,000 equity. He didn't have to do anything but sign some paperwork. And then I helped him get a tenant in there. And he was cash flowing, you know, $300, $350 a month on this property that he's never seen. and he gained $55,000 in equity for just saying, yeah, let's do this thing. So he's calling me up saying, dude, this is ridiculous. Like, why have we not been doing this for years? Like, what are we thinking? And I said, I don't know. I don't know why we haven't been doing this. Let's do more of it. So I went and got him another property. And this time it was the same experience. We got him a little nicer property. This one was worth about $200, and I think we got it for $135. So, and get it rented out. He's ecstatic at this point. He's like, man, I've signed some paperwork. I'm cash flow positive. We've done the BRRRR strategy, which is buy, rehab, rent, refinance, and repeat, right? Except the rehab part was pretty much done for us. So we would just buy it, rent it, and refinance it, get all of his capital back. So he had all of his money back on three deals, one for me and two for him. And he had over $100,000 in equity on two deals that I got him. He's never even seen. And he had, you know, between the two properties, I think $700 of positive cash flow profit coming in a month. So we're like, holy cow, this is awesome. Like, we got to keep doing this. So we put our heads together and we started really thinking on this. And we're like, what do we think about the Little Rock market long term? And we started doing some research. And I came to the conclusion that the most important thing about your real estate investments, okay, I won't say the most important, the two most important things about your real estate investments are monthly profit cash flow, right? Monthly cash flow, and then location, right? And this sounds obvious, but a lot of people don't get this right. Do you want a property that's making you $200 a month in profit in an area where people are moving, that people are moving out of by the droves? I don't, right? Now, everyone's got their own niche, their own angle that they take on this. But really the sweet spot, the spot where you hit the ball out of the park instead of hitting a single, and singles are fine, right? But why hit singles if you can hit a grand slam? Like, you actually have the option to actually hit home runs in real estate instead of hitting singles. People always say, oh, just take a single and move on. Yeah, singles are great, but here's the problem with that. The opportunity cost of your time. If one home run gets you one run on the board and one single gets you to first base, but you don't have a run on the board, you have to hit three more singles to get that run across the plate, right? So for time invested, we quickly discovered our Arkansas properties, while seemingly home runs, we later discovered they were base hits. And this is why the Little Rock market was not appreciating at a high clip. Now, Little Rock people, don't be upset with me. I still love the Little Rock market, and there is a place for it, right? But what we discovered was we don't want to own 150 single family rentals. We don't have time to own 150 single family rentals. And for those of you who don't own real estate properties, you may think, why not? 150 rentals doing the BRRRR strategy? Man, you'd make all this money. Yes, you would. But there's actually a way to own 10 rentals and to create the same amount of equity and to have incredible cash flow. And we're going to get to that. So we were like, and in the meantime, we found another Little Rock property in, I would say, an A-minus area, did the BRRRR strategy, bought it through a wholesaler. So I started learning how to work with wholesalers. Highly recommend you guys work with wholesalers to locate properties. Wholesalers are just basically bird dogs to go out and find you deals where you can do the BRRRR strategy. And if you have a good wholesaler, man, that relationship is so valuable. So at this time, we started thinking, okay, do we want to own, because we originally were saying we wanted to own 50 single family properties. We're going to own them all in Little Rock. And we started running the numbers. And we're like, what we're noticing is the Little Rock market, while it doesn't have high swings in appreciation year after year, it doesn't have high swings to the downside either. In 2008, it didn't really tick down too much. It had a little bump down, but it was very solid. So it was a very solid, steady as you go market. And I'm sure over the last year with what's happened with the Fed and stuff, that Little Rock has, the appreciation rate there has outpaced its norm. But I'm talking on average, okay? So we stack that up against some of these other markets like Nashville, Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, Texas, you know, markets like this. And we were like, wow, those markets are appreciating at like double or triple the appreciation rate per year that the Little Rock market is appreciating. And we started looking at the principal, like the value of our property appreciating at those rates and factoring that into our analysis. So started looking at the total ROI instead of just the cash on cash. And we came to the conclusion, wow, if we could do the same thing that we're doing now, but do it in a market that's appreciating at a 5% rate per year instead of a 2% rate or 2.5% rate, wow, we would double our portfolio value and, you know, we would be spending the same amount of time. And so my family moved to Huntsville, Alabama to be closer to grandparents and whatnot. And that's where my business partner lived. And we put our heads together and we started looking in the Huntsville market. Well, the Huntsville market then was just starting to really take off. And there just wasn't a lot of inventory here. So we looked and looked and looked and we got a couple properties, but we were going much slower than we really wanted to. So we decided, okay, we're gonna try to target a larger market that's really doing well and has a lot of potential to continue doing well. What factors were we looking at? We were looking at unemployment rate. We were looking at population growth. And we were looking at things like schools in the area, shopping in the areas that we're buying, the crime rate in the areas we're buying, things like that. We're trying to identify areas where we can achieve robust cash flow, robust monthly profit, as well as get the appreciation we want. So as you can imagine, as the quality of the area goes up, the cash flow profit margin goes down. Okay. So it stands to reason if you're in the worst neighborhood ever, that you're going to be able to cash flow like crazy because there's a lot more risk there, right? Like it's going to be, those properties are going to be selling for a lot less and you're going to, you know, for instance, you may be able to get a house for $30,000 and rent it for $800. Okay. That sounds wild, but that definitely exists. Okay. On the other side, if you go to the A+ neighborhoods and you're buying a house for $350,000 and it rents for $1,700, you're not even close to the 1% rent ratio. That's not going to cash flow for you, right? So as the quality of the neighborhood goes up, the cash flow margin goes down. Okay. So the sweet spot we identified was the B-class stuff. B-class, we could get good cash flow and we could get high quality assets and we could get high quality assets in areas that were appreciating well. And so we first looked in Nashville because Nashville was 2 hours from where we were living. And we thought the price points were a little too high to get the cash flow we wanted. So we said, well, although we love Nashville, we don't know that Nashville is going to work for us right now. So the next place we looked was Dallas, Fort Worth, where I used to live, my old stomping grounds. And since I was an appraiser, I knew all those areas very well. Well, Dallas, Fort Worth is 12 hours from where I live. So you're saying, what? You're going to go into a market 12 hours from you and invest heavily? That's exactly what we did. And it worked out great for us. So how did we do it? Investing out of state is not really that challenging if you get the right pieces on your team, right pieces in place. So what did we have to have? We had to have great wholesalers. We had to have a great team of people to do repairs. We had to have great real estate agents. And we had to have market knowledge of where the deals were. I had the market knowledge. We had to find these other pieces. So we got on these wholesalers list and we were using our own capital. Okay. And this is where the story really starts to pick up steam. We would get deals from a wholesaler and because the market was very competitive, like Dallas Fort Worth is, we would get a deal in and the wholesaler would basically say, hey, this is a good one. Not going to last long. And we would look at it for 5 minutes and go back to him and say, yeah, we want to get this one. He'd say, it's already gone. So we learned very quickly that we're not going to be able to get deals without pulling the trigger fast. And that meant sometimes buying things we'd never been inside. So we developed a level of comfort with just looking at deals on the surface level and being able to say, per square foot, what this property we think is worth and the price point we're getting it. Do we feel comfortable with the possibility that this thing has more problems than we're guessing it has based off of the information we have? And then we would have our contractor go out there and look at these things before we close to make sure we weren't getting ourselves into a disaster of a situation. And that never happened, believe it or not. We never got one of these sight unseen that ended up being a disaster. But we would use our capital, which my business partner was putting up, to take down these deals. Well, these wholesalers want you to pay for these in cash. Okay. So we tried to find hard money lenders. Well, our first experience with hard money lender, they basically said they could do the deal. They wasted time. They asked for a lot of stuff. They wasted time. They asked for a lot of stuff. And then it was time to close and they weren't ready. Well, the wholesaler lost their minds. I mean, just lost it. And we're like, look, we're going as fast as we can. Our hard money lender is not doing what they tell us they're going to do. We can't make them go any faster. So we got rid of that hard money lender, found another, did a couple deals with them. We were using bank financing on things, and it was just not the fastest route to do this. Like, you're going to learn as you're buying properties that using bank financing is fine, but that's like the traditional old school route, right? Find a property you like, go to the bank. They're going to give you a loan. If it's Fannie Mae, you know, they're going to want 20 or 25% down, put it on a 30-year fix. Conventional, that's great. You get 10 of those per person. If you go to the commercial side, they're going to give it to you on a 20 or 25-year AM, which isn't optimal to me. The interest rate's going to be a little higher. The commercial side, they can ask you for whatever they want. I mean, it could be a different experience than on the conventional residential side. But if you go through a hard money lender, you're supposed to be able to close these things fast, right? The hard money lender is going to charge a higher rate of interest, more points, and that kind of thing, but they can get you your money fast. So if you can find a good hard money lender, they can open things up in your business to be able to close more deals. So we located a good hard money lender. They were making a lot of money off of us when we closed these things, and we closed a few deals. Things were picking up for us with things that were going on in our business. I had my podcast going. I had been doing networking. And I became friends with Brandon Turner of Bigger Pockets and got invited to I'd had Brandon Turner on my podcast, actually. The first episode I aired had Brandon Turner. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. It sounds like I recorded it through a potato. The sound quality is not the best because I literally just recorded it because I didn't honestly think I was going to be able to get him on my show because he had no clue who I was. And, he said, okay. And I didn't have my quality equipment yet. So I just said, okay, I'm just gonna have to record this on what I have. So, but he invited me to this real estate mastermind in Hawaii. So went down to this real estate mastermind in Hawaii and was talking to some of the people there. And there was a guy there who said, you know, what do you think is holding your business back? And I said, well, one thing I can identify is just capital. I mean, we're basically held hostage by how much cash we have, because when we go buy a deal, if we've got $150,000 and the deal's you know, $120,000 from this wholesaler, there goes all our cash, and we've got $30,000 to get through the renovation, and you know, the hard money lender will acquire a certain amount down, and then you got to service your payments, and then you got to do your refi, and you got to hope that you hit your appraisal number, or you got to leave cash in it, you know. And I said, honestly, if we had more cash, I feel like I could just put the pedal to the metal. And he said, well, how much cash do you want? I said, I don't know. He said, how about $200,000? And I was like trying not to let my jaw drop. Right. I'm like, okay, that'd be great. Are you sure? You know? And so he said, yeah, I'll lend you $200,000 private money. I said, awesome. So this is where the whole thing changed for us. And you might be thinking, well, yeah, I mean, you got $200,000, but that's because you were doing your podcast and you're doing, like, you can do this stuff too. You're no different than I am. I've worked hard at this, but you can work hard at this as well. This can happen for you. There are people that you know that would be happy to lend you private money if they felt comfortable with you and your real estate savvy. Let's be clear. I don't think you need to go get private money if you don't know what you're doing investing in real estate. And that's not only for the sake of the lender. That's for your sake. You don't want to use private money when you don't know what you're doing and make a mistake, right? So start off baby steps. Start off doing your first deal the traditional route with the money you can scrap together. Get your deal done. Learn on that deal and then start growing. Like, I didn't start off with private money on my first property. I did a house hack. It was very simple and straightforward. I learned a ton, right? But when this guy said he would lend us private money, now we had hard money to buy these things. And we had private money to use as the layer on top for the down payments. So boom, game changer. So what did we do? We did about 20 deals in about 12 months. And these are all BRRRR properties, single family properties in the DFW area, high quality rentals that we were buying at a discount, renovating, getting them rented out and then refining. Okay. And this was going great. And then, then February, March, and April of 2020 happened. We had 10 of these finished. We had 10 that had just been purchased that were just being started on the reno. And boom, COVID happens. And we all know what happened now with the COVID thing. But then the articles that were in the paper were, the real estate market's going to implode. The real estate market is imploding. The real estate market is crashing and burning. Landlords are running for the hills. Tenants are terrified. Lenders are terrified. People can't refinance their properties. It was just all stuff like that, okay? Which, when you've got 10 empty properties that are in disrepair and you've got a crew of people that are trying to get in there and repair these, who are also terrified about getting a sickness that could kill them, and that the newspapers are writing about being a coin toss as to whether you're going to live or not, it presented a lot of challenges, okay? And one of the greatest challenges was the fact that our hard money lender and private money lender called me and said, things have changed. I need my money back. And I talked about this on my Bigger Pockets episodes as well. But you talk about a hard phone call to take because, you know, we had a certain term we had agreed to in our paperwork, and that term was not up, right? But he was calling because his investors were terrified, right? They're terrified that the money they invested in his business, his lending business, is not going to be returned from them. So they're asking him for their money back. So he asked me for his money back. So talk about some delicate conversations and very strange conversations. But I said, okay, we've always paid you. We've never been late on anything. You know, these properties are on the front end of renovations. I've got crews that are very difficult to get over there right now. Everybody's terrified about COVID and I don't want to put them in harm's way. And then I'm also trying to go as fast as I can to get these renovations done. So we tried to wholesale these properties. We blasted these out to people. Nobody would buy them. Nobody would buy these things. We had one that was finished, completely renovated. We put it up for sale. It went under contract to sell. The people took 2 weeks and then decided they were going to back out because they were just scared about what was going on in the economy. Put it back on the market. Same thing happened again. Somebody got under contract and decided to back out because they were scared about COVID. So we couldn't sell these properties. I mean, we were giving these things away. I mean, we could not give these things away. It was crazy. So we said, okay, we're going to have to bite the bullet and just do this the hard way. We came up with our own capital, paid for the renovation on these things because we couldn't even get the hard money lender, private money lender to reimburse us the cost on some of these repairs. We would file for reimbursement and they would just sit there and not fund it. And they were doing that because they were worried they weren't going to be able to get their money back. Still very frustrating because we couldn't finish what we wanted to do. So my business partner came to the table with enough cash to get us through these renos. We went and threaded the needle and did all these refinances through Fannie Mae in the worst possible time. Couldn't believe we pulled it off because we had an absolute rock star lender. He got these things refinanced for us. We paid this hard money lender back, and a good chunk of our capital was locked into these burr deals because the appraisers came in low on everything because the appraisers were terrified. So it was the perfect storm and the perfect time to get completely whipsawed out of real estate by this massive value crash. And then, as we know, the next month or next 2 months, the thing came roaring back. Okay. So we survived the crazy drop. We survived the frozen markets, both credit markets and literally just being able to sell your property, survived it. We put these things on the market to rent, and they rented lightning fast because people were terrified about COVID. They wanted to be in their own space. Okay. So throughout this process, we have all these properties rented now that we wanted to, that we, you know, we're not prepared to be in the situation with. And, we didn't have one tenant miss a payment throughout the entire thing. Okay. Not one, which is amazing. We had one lady that said that they had closed her salon down, and she asked if she could have some extra time to make her payment. We said, that's fine. And she made her payment. That was the biggest problem we have. So we were so blessed. And I attribute that experience to the fact that we bought high quality stuff. We bought B class, and a lot of the tenants that we had more professional type jobs, and those industries weren't hit quite as hard as some of the lower end jobs, like hourly jobs. So, okay. So that takes us to pretty close to today. So the real estate market comes roaring back. We had repair issues at our properties. We'd have pipes bust and things of that nature, where the property's renting, the property's making, I would say the average property we owned was making $200 profit a month. Okay. Not huge, not terrible, but these were high quality properties in Fort Worth, Texas. Most of them, some were in Huntsville. When we would have a pipe bust and we would have to send people out there to replace the pipes, dig everything up, you know, it would be $4,000. So at $200 a month, that's $2,400 profit for the year. $2,400 comes in for 12 months, $4,000 goes out in 1 month, and your cash flow negative, right? And we had this happen on multiple properties in Fort Worth. So we knew we had a portfolio on our hands that in 30 years or 20 years when we were, I'm 40 now, so when I was 60, 65 years old, these would be paid off and they'd be worth millions, right? But because of all the repair issues we were having, we were not making a lot of profit. These were supposed to be making us, you know, if you look at $2,400 a year times 20 properties, that's $48,000, right? I think that's right. $48,000 a year, but because of these repair issues, we're running higher than we had anticipated. We weren't bringing in $48,000, okay? So we went back to the drawing board and we said, what could we do to increase our cash flow profit and still have millions of dollars in paid for real estate when we're retirement age? And we came to the conclusion that we could look at apartments or we could look at vacation rentals, something like that. So I worked for several years trying to find apartments. We had multiple deals under contract that wouldn't work out for whatever reason. The apartment space was extremely competitive. I'm still very interested in apartments, by the way. But we bought a vacation rental. And the first vacation rental we bought was eye-opening, right? Because when we bought this property, we're coming from the experience of buying a deal and it cash flowing $200 a month. When we bought our vacation rental, it was cash flowing $3,000 a month profit. Some months $4,000. And we're like, holy smokes, why have we been over in the single family space when we could be making over 10x over here? What are we thinking? And so we got together and we had a lunch and I said, what do you think about us selling all these properties we just bought and did all this BRRRR strategy stuff on that we have equity? And the good thing about what we had done is we had taken our money, bought stuff at a discount, renovated it, created a lot of value, refinanced it, gotten most of our money back, if not all on some we didn't, some we got less than that, but we had money locked into these things. Okay. And we had created a lot of equity in these properties. Like what would it look like if we sold our entire single family portfolio and bought vacation rentals with our entire amount of equity, all of our equity? We just applied that to vacation rentals and we put together a model and we were like, holy smokes, we could turn 50 grand of yearly profit on our portfolio now into 500 grand. And we were like, this was our aha moment, right? We're like, what in the world have we been doing? So we sold some properties, sold a property, did a 1031 exchange, and on our first deal, bought a vacation rental. We used our 1031 money to go buy it. And since the market has exploded in Dallas-Fort Worth since the pandemic, our values have skyrocketed on these properties. So based on the money we put in to these deals, we have, and plus the BRRRR, you know, the BRRRR strategy equity created and the appreciation, we have nearly doubled our investment. And this was over the course of maybe a couple years, right? So we put in one, we get out $2. Put it for every $1, we're pulling out two at this point. We apply that $2 and it buys us a good number of vacation rentals. And after getting our first, we're like, holy smokes, this is working exactly as we thought it was. Oh, and by the way, I got my real estate license in the market we're buying in, and I'm making nice commissions off each one of these. So it's helping my income go up. It's 10x our business income, and we have less problems. We have less to manage, right? And I know you're wondering, okay, where are you owning these things? That doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. These things are all around you. You can do vacation rentals with your single families if you want. You can buy in vacation destinations like the beach or the mountains or, you know, a skiing destination or something like that. It doesn't really matter. The concept is the same though. Think about if you live in a town and you're like, oh, I don't have a vacation destination near me. Well, do you have a lake near you? Do you have a professional sports team near you? Do you have, like, these things are vacation rental material. These type items, lake houses are good vacation rental, properties. And then, you know, sports, if you're looking near a sports stadium, or there's all kinds of little things you can do with this. But long story short, we realized this and have been doing this, and it has exploded our business. And this is a true story. I'm telling you, none of this is made up. I'm not embellishing any of this stuff. I'm telling you the exact thing that's happened for us because I want good things for you guys. My wife and I bought a vacation rental property that made us a healthy six figures of income profit per year in one deal. Let that soak in. One deal. And the cash on cash return for the first year is over 100%. When I closed on this property, I got a check for over $20,000 for my commission. And we are making six figures profit on top of that commission check. And we had to put 20% down on the property. We're making over 100% for one purchase. This is, and this was the financial freedom moment for my family, was this isn't even a property in my business. So in our business, we've 10x'd, and I don't even want to tell you what that's turned into because it's not about that, right? But it's blown our minds and it's opened the floodgates of passive income on us. And I want this for you guys too. And this is the same thing you can achieve with apartments, with self-storage, with mobile home parks, with, it doesn't really matter what it is, but what you're after is robust recurring profit. Okay. And what we discovered was the single family thing, it multiplied our cash, but the monthly profit was not as robust as what we anticipated or as we needed. Because our repairs were running higher than we anticipated. So if you have single family properties that are killing you on repairs, give this a look. Like, look into this, okay? Because it's working like crazy for us. So long story short, I give all glory to God here. Like, I worked hard at this, but God has just overwhelmed us with blessings on this. You know, we're still in the process of transitioning out of all of our single families into all vacation rentals and things of this nature. I'm still shopping for apartments and I plan on owning apartments. And I'm open to other things too. So I would say, to wrap this whole thing up for you, my journey has been a series of trying things that were a bit terrifying, gathering feedback and data on those experiences, and being willing to change my mind if the outcome is not what was anticipated or desired. That may sound obvious to you, but most people I've found are not willing to change their minds about things. Is it possible that what you're doing is not the best way to do it? I want you to think on that question. Is it possible that vacation rentals are not the right thing for you? Absolutely it is. Because it's worked for me, it doesn't mean it's necessarily the right thing for you. I am not you. You are not me. But what I want you to become and to do is to use this mentality for you in your own life, in your own journey. And I want you to reach financial freedom by going your own way. It's not about what the guys on BP are doing. It's not about what I'm doing. It's not about what Rich Dad Poor Dad tells you. It's about you reading the tea leaves and you going the way that makes sense for you. That's where the magic happens. Because if you can really tune in and hone in on what will work and what works better than what you're doing and always move in that direction, you're going to go really good places. And you can 10X your income as well. And you can get passive income that's far greater than anything you've ever made before actively. Like, we're in a place where, you know, the money that's coming in passively is overwhelming us because we can't make as much with our active jobs. I mean, we're like, what, you know, do we need to stop working at these other things? And we haven't, because that's not who we are. We really enjoy working, but man, it's opened up the ability to work on things that we're really more interested in. So guys, I wanted to share this with you because this financial freedom journey has been one of the greatest experiences of my life. And it's not just about the money. It's about the freedom of time to spend with friends and family. I've loved every moment I've been spending with you guys on the podcast. I've loved interacting with you. And I will continue to drop episodes, surprise episodes here and there. They will not be dropped on a weekly basis. They may not even be dropped on a monthly basis. But if you stay subscribed, it may pop up on your radar every once in a while, and we can spend some time together and have some fun with this. So send me an email. You can find it on my Instagram account. That's at Daily Real Estate Investor. My email address is in the links there. Send me an email and tell me about your financial freedom experience. And know that I'm praying for you guys. I want good things for you guys. And I want you to experience the financial freedom that's available to you through real estate investing. I love you guys. I'll catch you next time.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please connect with me on Instagram at Daily Real Estate Investor. or via email at josiahsmelser@gmail.com. My new book titled Dream It and Build It, How to Crush Your Real Estate Investing Goals is out. You can get it either in digital or physical format on Amazon. Once you've read the book, please leave me a review. Tune in next time for another episode of The Daily Real Estate Investor as we both join in our financial freedom journey.